Had yesterday started to sketch out the basic parameters of the question about lifnei iver, whether the prohibition to help somebody sin is that a added prohibition on top of the pashtus of the pasuk of tripping somebody with a rock, or is it the same idea applied in a different arena, that just like you can't physically trip somebody up, so too you can't spiritually trip them up. Suggested that primary question really could affect all the other issues that are brought up in the sugya of lifnei iver, such as the first question that the Achronim devoted a lot of time to, the issue of whether lifnei iver is an accessory idea. Essentially, let's assume for simplicity's sake that the avera that the person is doing is a ben adam l'makom, so therefore you are accessory of that avera ben adam l'makom. Or is it a ben adam l'chavero, that regardless of what kind of a vera he's doing, you are being machshel him? And we spoke yesterday about how that plays into issues in the first paragraph of Shabbos, why we got into the topic in the first place. And also the question of how this explains certain issues relevant to Shabbos. So one major nafkamina of this question, very significant nafkamina of this question, is the sugya of Yehari Val Yavor. That if somebody forces you, let's say somebody tries to compel you to help somebody do an avera, which is classified as a Yehari Val Yavor, does that have itself a halacha of Yehari Val Yavor? That seems to emerge directly from this question. Again, are you an equal participant in whatever avera it is? Or should we say that no, the person who's nifshal, he's doing the Yehari Val Yavor act. You are doing an issur lifnei iver. And that's its own issur. It's not subject to the same stricture of Yehari Val Yavor itself. So that seems to be a machlokas, the Baal HaMor and the Ramban, on the sugya of Yehari Val Yavor, Sanhedrin, that $9 in Aleph. How exactly it comes out from their words is a long, complicated explanation, so I won't try to say it today. It'll take a long time, but you can definitely look it up. It's the Ramban and the Baal HaMor over there in the sugya. The Ramah happens to pass in Makula on this, which is probably very significant, that there is no obligation of Yehari Val Yavor under those circumstances. Parenthetically, it was relevant, I think, a little bit to Chumash here this year, that, or maybe it came up last year, I forgot already which Uli is saying, but some of the discussion about Aaron and his decision, which is relevant to this week's parsha, so that's a little synergy right there, but they really relevant to the beginning of Shemini. Aaron's guilt is what's dealt with a little bit at the beginning of Shemini for having cooperated in the Chet HaEgel. So there also, there is a discussion that was Aaron justified or not in helping with the Chet HaEgel, working off the belief that he would have been killed if he didn't do it. So should we say, well, even so, he had an obligation to Yehari Val Yavor? Or should we say, no, he was only in violation, theoretically, lifnei iver by avodah zarah, and that's not Yehari Val Yavor. There are a couple of different interesting considerations about that case specifically. For example, the fact that, as Chazal expressed it, it's not only that he was concerned about his life, but that he was concerned also that if they had taken that step, they would go too far, they would not be able to ever do tshuva. They had already killed Chur, if they had killed him also, there'd be no hope for redemption. So especially when we look at lifnei iver as a issue of getting the other person in trouble, so here his whole decision is made based on a calculus of what will leave them the most potential for return. So how does that factor into the discussion? That's also an important issue. Just parenthetically, that's relevant to this whole question of Yehari Val Yavor and the like. So this is a major discussion the Achronim have. What is the relationship of the machshil, of the one helping, to the actual avera taking place? So that is major issue in the Achronim number one. Major issue in the Achronim number two, which ties into issue one, and therefore both of them tie into our original question, is when does one violate lifnei iver? If I give you a pork sandwich at 9 o'clock in the morning and you eat it at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so when did I violate lifnei iver? Did I violate it when I gave you the mikshel? Or did I violate it when you actually were nikshel, when you actually ate it? So this sounds like a very technical question. It doesn't really make much of a difference in Shemayim when you're defending yourself. And they accuse you of violating with me'iver at 9 o'clock in the morning, and you argue, no, it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Hard to see how that's going to make much of a difference. Except it does make a difference, because what if the guy never does the aver? So then do we say, all right, you got lucky, you're not over on the me'iver? Or do we say, no, you violated the me'iver anyway, even though he wasn't actually nichshol? So that should really flow from the previous question. That if the issue is you're participating in the Avera, so then presumably if the Avera doesn't actually happen, you didn't do anything. But if the issue is that it's more of a literal parallel to what's the Pashto's reading in the Pasuk, so the Pasuk doesn't say you're only in violation if the guy actually trips. It says, the placing of the Mikshol is the Avera, and presumably that's true here as well. Of course, as we also emphasized, that it's only called a mikshol in the first place if the person has a status of an iver. If you're going to, let's say, if the Rebbe of the Yeshiva confiscates a student's non-kosher food and turns it over to the menahel, so we don't say he's in violation of lifnei iver for giving this non-kosher food to the menahel, because he's not considered to be an iver. So it has to be somewhere in the middle, where maybe it's not definite that the person is actually going to be over, but he has to at least have a vulnerability that's noteworthy in order for the iser to make sense in the first place. So this is a whole discussion, and there are various rayas from various gemaras. The Yad Malachi is the sefer that first really made this question a prominent question, quoted by later Achronim as the one who really brought this question to fore. So he himself notes that there are some Gemaras that indicate in different ways. For example, the Gemara says in Moed Katan that one should not strike his adult son because of the concern that the son will hit him back, and that's a violation of lifnei iver. And it sounds like from the Gemara like it's lifnei iver automatically, regardless of what the son actually does. On the other hand, there's a Gemara in Masechet Kiddushin, which talks about someone who wanted to test his son's temperament and therefore tore up silk in front of him to see if he would treat his father disrespectfully. And the Gemara says over there, well, shouldn't you worry that maybe he will treat him disrespectfully and that will be an issue of neiver? So it sounds like from that Gemara that it's only with neiver if the avera actually happens. Although Rav Tzipi Yisach Frank has a tshuva about that, where he says that's not what the Gemara is trying to say. The Gemara is just explaining the point we said a few minutes ago, that you have to think through what the potential is in order to verify that there's a mikshel here. But it doesn't mean to say that only if the son actually gets upset is he in violation. He's in violation because of the potential the son might get upset. So that's what the Gemara is explaining. Another proof that seems to indicate that way is the Gemara in Bava Metzia. It's a good question how we deal with this halacha l'maisa nowadays, because we don't seem to worry about it so much l'halacha, but the Gemara says that one should not lend money to someone else without witnesses, because that's a violation of lifnei iver. And therefore it sounds also as if it's not necessarily the case that the borrower actually denies the loan. It's just that the fact that he's tempted to, and that he has the ability to, because you are giving him that possibility about 100 witnesses, that sounds like that's automatically already lifnei iver. So a lot of discussion about these various makaros. Again, it all ties in, clear how, I think it all ties into the previous question, and that all ties into our original question. There are some other important outgrowths to this discussion. So, for example, a major issue that's talked about what about Yisurim Rabban? What if one violates, if the nichshal is violating an issur d'rabbanan, so what type of issur is there on the nachshol? And here you find in Rishonim, you find at least three views. There are those who say it's not lifnei iver, it only applies to yisurim d'raisa. There are those who say it is lifnei iver on a level midaraisa. And in between, there are those who say it's lifnei iver, but only on a level midrabbanan. could explain those views, that if you believe that it's about tripping up the person, so then that's going to be Nisr D'Oraisa, regardless of what type of tripping up a person is doing. So even if he's only tripped up on a level Midrabanan, but you're tripping him up, that should be Nisr D'Oraisa. But if it's about participating in the Avera, so then it makes sense to say you can only violate to the extent that he's violating. Shlo Yehei Tafel Chamer Meneker, that you would say normally that the one who's helping, the assistant, shouldn't be more severe than the one who's actually doing it. So it would seem to be you could only be as liable as the Nichshol himself. Now, if you take the position that it's not necessarily the Igra at all, so that's a little bit harder to explain. Some want to suggest that that's based on the idea that we have to have a Michshol in order to have Nisr Lifnei Iver, and based on the notion we discussed a couple of times that Dinim Rabbanan perhaps are only addressed to the individual and don't change the nature of an item. So maybe there's no such thing as a Michshol Midrabbanan. There's only rabbinic prohibitions about the individual, but something as an object can only have a status as a Michshol on a level of Minat Torah. We also discussed the position of the Amun HaShmuel. The Amun HaShmuel, as the sheet is quoted on the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch by many later Sfarim, the Amun HaShmuel's big chiddush was that there's no Issa Lifnei Iver if the Machshul himself is not subject to this prohibition. If the Nichshol is prohibited, but the Machshul is not prohibited, so then there's no Issa Lifnei Iver. And you could ask, well, the Gemara says explicitly, the Gemara has, seems to be some kind of out-of-the-way examples in order to illustrate just the parameters of Lifnei Iver. The Gemara gives the example of a Ben Noach. If you give a Ben Noach a Iver Menachai, which is a prohibition for Ben Noach also, so that's a violation of Lifnei Iver. So in order apparently to emphasize that the Savera applies even when dealing with non-Jews also. And the other example the Gemara gives is you give wine to a Nazir. So you could think instinctively that that's against the Amun HaShmuel, because where is the implication here that the Machshol himself is a Nazir and therefore is prohibited to drink wine? So that he already addresses. He says, look, she a Nazir, meaning that the prohibitions of Naziris apply to everyone, men and women equally, as you know. So if that's the case, so even though most individuals you'll come across are not actively Nazirim right now, but the laws of Naziris do apply to them. The prohibition of drinking when in Naziris does apply to all of us in this room, even if none of us are Nazirim right now. So that doesn't have to be a problem for the Amun HaShmuel. But in general, the Amun HaShmuel's position seems to only make sense if you say that Lifnei Iver means you share in the Avera itself. Because if it's about tripping the other guy up, why should there be any such distinction? It only seems to make sense if you say that it's an accessory idea, I share in the Avera, so if I'm not subject to the Avera, therefore it's not problematic for me to help him. Hi.
I would answer for about the case of
Well, that's okay. Just to point that out, that it's interesting that the Gemara goes out of its way to give this example when there are so many simpler examples. Apparently the Gemara wants to make sure that we know that it doesn't just limit itself to Jews, but that there's a prohibition by non-Jews as well. So we're just making that point on the way to discussing the Gemara about Nazir, although we will come back to that a little bit. But it's not a question in itself. In fact, the Amun HaShmuel mentions that because some of the Rishonim say that this prohibition applies because Avram and Achai is prohibited both to Jews and to non-Jews. So since Jews are also subject to the prohibition of Avram and Achai, so therefore they have an Isser of Lifnei Iver. The Amun HaShmuel says, you see, you need that. You need the fact that they're also subject to the prohibition in order for it to be applicable.
So, I mean, there are certain cases where the Ben Noach would be chayav in something that a Jew would not be chayav.
Theoretically, it's a whole complicated sugya and Sanhedrin and Kulin. Whether or not such a thing exists is machlokes.
So there are abortion type issues.
Maybe, after that, in very specific cases. So, yeah, you theoretically could come up with a case, Although that's not going to be a kasha in the Gemara, because the Gemara still is mentioning something which, for the most part, should apply. Even though the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in the Chulin, does, Tosin Chul does consider the possibility that with an Avram and Achai, there are differences. But at least on a pashtus level, it's not necessarily a kasha.
Separate from that, what is the Avinu Shmuel's position? Or is the fact that he's asking the question?
His position, his shita, is that if the Machshil is not subject to the Avera, so then he's not subject to the Issel of Neira. We gave a non-halachic example that in an MTA, the students aren't allowed to use the elevators, just the faculty is allowed to use the elevators. So what would happen if a faculty member enabled to help the door, elevator door open for one of the students? So would you say that he violated Lifnei and enabling the student to use the elevator? And you say, no, he can't violate Lifnei because the issue of using the elevator doesn't apply to him. He's allowed to use the elevator. So this position of Mirna Shmuel, is there a question over here? Okay, so this position of the Emunah Shmuel, Reb Chaim Ozer Grzinski and Achiezer and others ask the question, which seems like it's a very compelling question, that why don't we say that this is logarim bad advice? That we know that one of the forms of lefneiver is to also give somebody bad advice. That's the third format of the prohibition. So ein lecha bad advice bel mizeh. If you're going to help somebody do an aveira, that's an aveira for them. Even if for you it's not an aveira, so why aren't you at least guilty of one of the other permutations of lefneiver, that of giving somebody bad advice? So Reb Chaim Ozer says a big chiddush there, very interesting to show, that there is a difference. That when you give somebody bad advice, so that person is a shogeg in the bad advice. He doesn't know that the advice is bad. So therefore, he's going to be tripped up through his lack of knowledge. But when you help somebody to do an Avera, so then he does know. He's amazing. So that opens up a lot of questions. There are many different shitas about whether Lifnei Iver applies specifically to Mizidin, whether it applies specifically to Shogigin, whether there's a difference between a Mummer and a non-Mummer. But in Reb Chaim Ozer's formulation, he does create this dual structure that there's a difference between the different branches of Lifnei Iver, that bad advice is tripping somebody up when they don't know about it, and helping with an Avera is conceptualized differently. That's about taking advantage of somebody even though they know that there is an Avera and then stop to the maze. So presumably, if the guy is a shogig, so then you'd be in violation at least of the other form of Neiva. That would be a Kal V'chomer from bad advice, and it would be a bad advice Lif Neiva. But if he's a maze, then it's a Lif Neiva helping somebody do an Avera, and that might have this exception that Kim Mona Shmuel says, that if the Avera is not shy to you, it doesn't extend to you. Parenthetically, to talk about the bad advice issue for a second, so there is a sefer called Mitzvah Sa'itza. It's by Joseph Epstein, wrote many beautiful svarim many years ago about topics of Benot Mechavero and the like. And he actually has one volume of Sol on Purim, so still have some time to catch up on that while it's still fresh. But he has a sefer called Mitzvah Sa'itza, where the whole volume is about the mitzvah of giving good advice. And he has different makoros for what that's about. And one of the ideas he maintains there is that if the issel of Ne'iver tells you there's an issel to give bad advice, then it correlates to that there's a chiyuv to give good advice. Well, one could question that correlation, but that's one of the points he makes there. And we mentioned parenthetically that Rabbi Levine, Zechanu Levracha, in one of his books, talks about the fact that Rashi on Chumash, when Rashi talks about the prohibition of onas devar, of causing somebody emotional pain, that he includes in that list an example that's not in the Gemara about Mitzvah about onas devar. He includes giving somebody bad advice. So, by being discussed, is this a contradiction that we just said giving bad advice is a violation of the Iver Lositin Vashal? And here Rashi is including it as an issur of onas devar. So then you could ask whether it's necessarily such a kasha or not. But the issue could be that what he wants to suggest over the Vina's resolution is that it's two different scenarios. That with the iver, the bad advice, is only if the person takes the bad advice and then ends up suffering because of it. So then you're in violation of lifnei iver. When if the person chooses not to take the bad advice, which he does because he catches on and he realizes that you're misleading him, so then it's onas dvarim because you're going to hurt his feelings. He realizes that you don't respect his intelligence and you're trying to steer him wrong. So that's not lifnei iver then, but it is onas dvarim. He suggests that if you look at that kasha, if that kasha is problematic. I mean, it's also probably possible to say that just both these sort of overlap in terms of this particular act, but that was a resolution that he had. In terms of the point of a few minutes ago about the application to non-Jews, so it's also relevant the question of whether you share in the Aveira or whether it's about tripping the person up, because that becomes a question also, do non-Jews have a prohibition themselves of this behavior? In other words, the Gemara makes it clear that you can't be machshil a non-Jew, but does the Ben Noach himself have a prohibition of lifnei iver? So you'll say, well, it's not one of the Zion mitzvos, so apparently not. Unless you say that it's not an independent mitzvah, it's an accessory idea, and therefore it tells us that any time there is an aveira taking place, so you're not allowed to help with it. So then maybe Ben Noach should have this sister as well. The possibility that they don't have this concept explains the position of the Rush, which he's interpreting a Gemara, that says, Alefnei kapdinan, Alefnei, lo kapdinan, that we're careful not to violate lifnei iver, but we're not necessarily careful not to violate lifnei. But if you're going to give something to someone else, and that person is going to give it to a third party who's going to violate Naveira with it, so that's not necessarily a prohibition. So the other Rush comments that this is talking dafka about a non-Jewish person, because if you have somebody in between, so then your issue is you're being machshil, that person with neiver who's going to give it to a third party. But if the person in between is not subject to the issue with neiver, then that's why you don't have a problem. Okay, there are a number of other issues that we spoke about in connection with this, just to mention a few. So there is, we saw this issue of the Rabbanans, and this is relevant to the question the post can talk about. It goes back to the Shulchan Aruch already, the question of giving somebody food if you're not sure they're going to make a bracha, they're going to wash, etc. Should it be an issue of Neiva? So while this is brought up already in Shulchan Aruch, many contemporary posts can are make on this for various reasons. Among them, that we're dealing with an Issa D'Rabbanan, and it's usually possible to get food anyway. And Prima Gadim and others suggest that the Issa D'Rabbanan of Nisayeya, of helping somebody to do an Aveira that they really could do without you, so if you're dealing with an Issa that's itself D'Rabbanan, so if you saw that as a Gzeira, or something that's not necessarily prohibited. Sometimes there's also a tliya, there's also the possibility that maybe they will do it right, and sometimes when you have a tliya, when you have a likely possibility or a viewable possibility that they're not going to do an aveira with it, that helps. You also find that there are other considerations. So we mentioned the tshuva of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, where he describes a scenario where if you're going to refuse to provide somebody with food, you're going to alienate them. So we talked about if you have a guy working in your backyard in the middle of the summer and it's 120 degrees, and he comes in and he sees you're sitting on the couch with the air conditioner with a huge pitcher of ice water, and he asks you for some, and you say, no, sorry, you're not going to make a bracha. So maybe you're avoiding a lowercase of neiver, but you're going to be big time with neiver, and that he's going to end up hating from Jews. So it says in Shlomo Zalman, you have to be aware there's a trade-off here and that it's more important to focus on the big picture as far as that's concerned. Hi.
What about more like proactive kirv where they're not expecting food like Shlomo Zalman's case? You have like a kirv event where you have food where you invite people to come. So there you're not going to alienate anyone because you didn't have to invite them in the first place.
Right. So I assume that also gets a little bit into the Chetei Kidei Shiyuzaka, assuming again that there really is an actual of Neiver involved in that, which itself, as we see, is subject to a couple of issues. So it actually overlaps more with the Chatei Kadesh Yizaka question. But the thrust of the Rav Shlomo Zalman's Svara is still there, that the overwhelming impact is going to be towards their spiritual growth. And presumably the logic still applies, even if the math is a little bit different. Hi.
Okay, according to the first Svara that they're going to get paid anyways, mm-hmm. what if it would be, let's say, a Jewish person who's a poor person that's a beggar,
right.
and you want to give him food, but you know he's not going to fit, but you, so you think he might not make a rub, because then it's no longer that Svara.
Maybe, maybe not. The question is, you know, is he really not going to get it anyway? I mean, the scenario you have nowadays that somebody's mom is so poor, first of all, so it's going to become a situation to go off Netflix, then so that involves other things. And then Rosh Hashanah Sar for sure applies in that case. You can't say that you're going to refuse to help a starving guy because you're afraid you're not going to make the bracha, then for sure that logic's going to apply. So the mice, it's going to be hard to find a scenario like that with a person. Right, with a person literally cannot eat anything without you. And you're still going to have a reason to not provide it. It's hard to find that model exactly. Hi.
So what do we do with the Tosos and Sayel and Torah there?
So they say, yeah, right, that's the Rabban that we're talking about. So that's the Rabban and Sayel and Torah there. And then the question is, if the Isra itself is Rabban, it's also a question that's an Isra Asay, not making a bracha is not even an Isra, it's a Bittul Asay. So there's all those together create a more lenient...
Even if it's a problem, you're giving bread...
Yeah, the benching would be a bit lasse, it would be after the fact. So all of that ties in. We discussed also connection with that, the question that the post can talk about inviting somebody for Shabbos meals and the like, if they're going to violate Shabbos in getting there. So this was a machlokas haposkim, there's a lot of serious literature about this. On the one hand, Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he's against this. He says that it's an act of Hasasa, your mesis, you're encouraging the person to do an avera, which is an important aspect also, because the question is to call it ne'iver. You have to figure out whether that's really the right terminology, because you're not making it possible for him to do an avera, you're giving him a reason to do the avera, you're not giving him the car keys. So whether ne'iver is really part of the discussion is a fair question. Rav Soloveitchik was quoted as also being machmir about this, and Rav Shechter quotes him in Nefesh HaRav as having been machmir about this, but Rav Shechter himself and many others are makel about this under the assumption that, again, the person's spiritual well-being is going to be greatly enhanced, hopefully, and therefore that should be the guiding line. He also does assume, though, under those circumstances, that you'll make it possible for the person to stay. You're not forcing the person into the scenario where he has to drive. You'll say, listen, we're happy to have you for the whole Shabbos, the whole Yontif, or whatever it is, and here's, we have a bed for you, we have availability. Then the person chooses not to do that. So then that's their decision. But within that framework, so he and many others are make on that, and that's a widely held attitude for reasons, again, that we understand. But we also mentioned the flip side of that, that when it comes to lifting anywhere in general, so we have meta considerations like this, that there is the larger picture of not wanting to drive somebody away from Frumkeit or wanting to bring somebody closer to Shemir HaMitzvos. So sometimes that becomes a dominant sphere. And sometimes you can have the opposite, where even though technically maybe it's not Lifnei Iver Elositei Mitzvah, because you'll have whatever kulas that are relevant, but if the message that you're making is that this aveira is not important, if you're creating a zilzal towards a certain avera because you're passively endorsing it, despite the fact that it's not technically with Naiva, so then that might be a bad decision for the other reason. So you have a big role here for das, you know, for how you're going to interpret the circumstance, that you could have scenarios where it would be technically a problem from those Naiva perspective, but there are reasons to do it. And you can have scenarios where it's technically mutter from the Lifnei perspective, but there are reasons not to do it. So it requires a sense of perspective over the whole issue to know how to address it. We talked a little bit about some of the svaras that were suggested. For example, those who protest on Shabbos for Kavod Shabbos, knowing that that's going to lead to Chilul Shabbos because the newspapers are going to come and cover it, or the television cameras are going to come and cover it. Say in Israel, where they're Jewish, That's where these protests happen. So should you worry about Lifnei Iver? So many would say, yes, you should worry about Lifnei Iver. But the Svara to do it is to say that the whole purpose is to be Mechazek Shmir Shabbos, so you don't have the same liability for the individuals who are going to, on their own, decide to Mechal Shabbos in order to make this decision. Again, there are many who will disagree with that Svara, but that's part of the math that goes into that understanding, and it correlates a little bit also to the question if somebody is driving around and asks you for directions. So should you give them directions or not? So on the one hand, if you give them directions, they'll drive much less. If you don't give them directions, he's going to circle around much more, and may stop many more times, ask many more people until he finds where he has to go. So you'll minimize the avers that he does by giving him directions so he gets there as quickly as possible with the fewest stops. On the other hand, there are those who say no, but that's encouraging the act, so even though he'll do more acts of Chil Shabbos without your directions, but you're still better off not supporting this way. So again, it takes a Seichel HaYashar to know in each case what is the correct approach. We mentioned the two Joe Liebermans. On the one hand, Senator Joe Lieberman and his campaign for the presidency. So one could question whether it was right for him to consider taking on that responsibility, the vice presidency and the presidency, where he would be in a position where Pikuach Nefesh would force him to be Mechal Shabbos all the time, theoretically. But on the other hand, one could also make the case that, which is a very real fact, that the contribution he made to Shmira Shabbos in America, because he raised the level of awareness where it wasn't there before, and made it much easier for people to take off on a Friday afternoon when somebody of his stature was doing it. So one could argue that itself is a bigger enhancement of Shmira Shabbos than any compromises he might be taking on. It's a valid argument as well. And the other, Yosef Lieberman, the Tshuvas Mishnas Yosef, has a number of tshuvas that we made reference to in terms of this. He talks about the Rabbanans, he talks about other types of scenarios with Lifnei Iver and some practical applications. Okay, so we probably said more than that, but for our Chazara purposes, that's probably enough for now. Any questions about any of that? Okay, so we're not up to yet Chatei Kedesh Yizake, but just while we're talking about this, so just to mention the parallel, so we saw how the sukkahs are related to each other, and it was helpful to us that we saw both sukkahs in the same Zman here, because, again, without addressing Chatei Kedesh Yizake fully now, but you have the same type of questions and the other way around, that is there a svara to say you should take on an aveira on behalf of somebody else? What exactly is the nature of that thinking? Is it that we're thinking that you all are one entity, that we're all on the same team, and therefore, if the other person is doing a big aveira, that's going to impact you too, so better you should apply the math of do a smaller aveira to prevent the bigger aveira? Or do we say, no, it's not that you're participating or that you're connected to whatever aveira he's doing, but you care about him as discrete individuals, so therefore, it's a mitzvah to save this person from the aveira, and that mitzvah is worth perhaps taking a smaller hit in order to perform that mitzvah. So a lot more to say about that, but just while we're talking about the neighbor at the same time, to mention the connection and the Me'iri on Daf Gimel, the Me'iri does explicitly connect the sugyas. When the Gemara talks about the question of when the Gemara talks about Chatei Kedesh Yizake, the Miri over there mentions that the issue is that because of the principle of Ne'iver, you could bear responsibility for what that guy is doing, and therefore that perhaps gives you this Svara of Chatei Kedesh Yizake Chavercha. Okay, so now maybe let's just spend a few minutes going back to the topic of Hotzah specifically, and talking about the Avos and the Toldos. So there is some disagreement as to what is a toldo in the context of Hotzah, that it sounds like from the Gemara that Tachnasa, for example, is a toldo. It sounds like that the Gemara on Daf Sadi Zayin. However, not everyone agrees, and the Ramban suggests that it's a machlokas hasugyas. The Gemaras don't necessarily agree with each other, and that there is an opinion in the Gemara that it is an Av, and the Rambam seems to list it among Avos as well. One of the issues the Rishonim were talking about is that the Rishonim say that perhaps as a consequence of Balacha Geruah, so while when it comes to other Avos, the whole distinction between an av and a told is that an av is in the Mishkan and a told isn't. But when it comes to Hotzah, it could be that even the toldos, which will all be subsumed under the av of Hotzah, also need to have a source from within the Mishkan. But in any event, when it comes to Hachnasa, it seems to be it's Machlokes Rishonim. And that within the Rambam's perspective, so we could understand why that would be from a couple of angles. So one, we did mention a few days ago when we talked about toldos and what is a tolda and what is an av, that the Rambam has a more generous definition of an av, that the Rambam only needs a similar purpose for something to be considered an av, while other Rishonim might require greater degrees of overlap. So that already helps him to include more things within the av definition. And then when it comes to Hachnasa, so it could be, as Rasal Vaychik suggested in Harei Kedem, and others suggest, that if the Rambam believes that it's all about schlepping things, so then the way we understood the Rashba and the Ramban, so then it makes sense that both Hachnasa and Maver Dal Ramas Bishas Rabban, which we'll talk about in a minute, should all be included within the Av, because it's all essentially about schlepping.
Hi. Now, wouldn't that apply to Tosos as a change in Rishos?
So, in terms of Dal Ramas Bishas Rabban, less applies a little bit less. In terms of Hachnasa, maybe so, but we mentioned the other day that yes, Hachnas on the one hand seems to be the same thing in all senses as Hotzah, and the Gemara actually mentions such an idea, Malia Yuli Malia Fuke, but at the same time, if the real gather of Hotzah is that you're making it available for your purposes outside, so then we could say that really it's about Hotzah, and that Hachnasa is just the inverse of that. So there is some debate about how strong that Svara is, Malia Yuli Malia Fuke, is that really a compelling Svara or not? So there is some room to say that the Iker Shinu Rishus, the way it was in the Mishkan, is about taking the contributions from the inside, bringing it out into the Rishus Aravim, and that's really the Tzura of changing Rishus that defines the Malach. But the Rambam does not so go into that specifically. That could explain for Hachnasa, and even more so for Dal Ramas Rishus Aravim, why he would have them both as Avos, as opposed to, he does have toldos, he talks about Moshit and Zorek as toldos. There, apparently, you do have somewhat of a difference that's strong enough to remove it from Av status. But Chotzah, Achnasa, and Adamus, Prishos, Rabim, according to the Rambam, will all be Avos, probably because of a combination of those two points, that he already has a more liberal standard for what's considered to be an Av. And if the purpose is the schlepping, so then all of these are essentially comparable as far as their schlep factor is concerned.
Where would you get that the Rambam was holding that it's the reason for Hotzah schlepping?
There are other proofs, but this seems to itself be one of them. You know, that in terms of the fact that he lists them all together, that could explain it, that they basically all have out status, because I think this could itself be its proof of itself. If you understand that they're all about, it's all about schlepping, so then it makes sense that they're all going to be grouped together. They all have essentially the same thing going on. This, in terms of Dal Ramas for Shos HaRavim, so it sounds like, again, from the Gemara, like it's Halacha Moshe Sinai, Hilchos HaGemirula. There is a discussion in the Rishonim what that means, Hilchos HaGemirula. So it sounds like from the Rashba that the Etzem Halacha itself, that there's a prohibition of carrying in public, is what's the Halakha Moshe Sinai, while the Baal Mor has an extra level here that has to do with the idea of Dalet Amos Shel Adam Kone, that there is a king in Dalet Amos that one can acquire property through and coming into his four Amos perimeter, and that's what's talked about here. So the Svarim point out that that's a Dinder Rabbanan, so it sounds like from the Gemara that's a Dinder Rabbanan. And presumably you could answer that question and say that the Kenyan is a Dinder Rabbanan, but the Kenyan reflects the reality that there is a Rishus around the person that is Dalet Amos, and that's what Maver Dalet Amos is based on. So then the question is also asked, but doesn't the Dalet Amos walk with him? That every time he moves, he's carrying it, so shouldn't we say that it's following him around? and therefore he hasn't actually taken it out of any one rishos. So presumably what the Baal HaMor is getting at is not necessarily that it's about taking it out of your rishos, but that since Dal Ramos is considered to be a rishos, so that shows you that's the minimal definition of a rishos. And once you are walking in public where there isn't anything that's defined as its own rishos ha-yachid, so then every time you cover Dal Ramos, mele you have gone from one theoretical rishos to another theoretical rishos. So it's also possible, as some achronim suggest, that the question we've had about the shluck factor versus the changing rishos factor, that that could be a difference between Dal Ramos rishos ha-rabin and hosah or hachnasa. It's possible to say that when it comes to hosah and hachnasa, so that's all about changing rishos from one place to the next. But when it's about Dal Ramos rishos ha-rabin, maybe that's about shlepping. The Rashba, who says that it's all about shlepping, who doesn't say it, but we've understood that it's all about shlepping. So it makes sense that the Rashba Lushitaso, when he talks about the Halacha Moshe Mitzinai, he doesn't focus on this Dal Ramos Shaladam or Rishos idea, because it's not really relevant to his understanding of the Malacha. But maybe other Rishonim also could say that when it comes to Dal Ramos Rishos HaRabim, that's about shlepping. It's not about changing rishos. It's possible two different versions of Hotzah have two different definitions to them. Parenthetically, there are some achronim who suggest that since carrying Dal Ramos rishos ha-rabin is a halacha l'moshe mi-sinai, so therefore it's not subject to the rules of the other malachos, and therefore it doesn't require, for example, malachas machshavas. There's some achronim who have maintained that. There is, similar to this a little bit, that if you say that the hagdara of carrying outside is different than the hagdara of hotzah, hotzah is about changing the rishos, and carrying outside is about schlepping. So we said yesterday that the role of akira and hanacha is affected by that question. Right? That if it's about changing rishos, then akira and hanacha are everything. That's the malacha itself. Picking it up from one rishos, putting it down in another rishos, that's what the malacha is made up of. But if it's about schlepping, so we know we need akira and hanacha, but they don't play the same kind of role. Then they're just conditions for chiyuv. They're not the definition of the avera, and it plays a different type of role. So it's possible to say that when it comes to hotzah, akira and hanacha are the definition of the avera. But when it comes to havarat dal ramos rishos ha-rabin, akira and hanacha take a lesser role, but they're not about the defining of the avera itself. It's a condition for chiyuv, but the avera happens kind of without that. So one nafkamina that couldn't possibly address this difference is actually relevant to Daf Yomi yesterday. How's that for some synergy? You see, it should have kept up.
We're almost finished with Sukkah. I'll get to the next one.
That's what everyone says, especially nowadays, because the sectors can get shorter and shorter. So we'll say, oh yeah, I'll wait till next month. We'll do something right. So you have to conquer that feeling. So yesterday's Daf Yomi is the din that we're all familiar with anyway, that Daf Mem Gimel and Sukkah talks about the Gezeira, that one should not blow shofar or take a lulav on Shabbos. Because the Gemara always says that we're afraid you'll consult an expert, Gezeira Shema Yavirenu Dal Ramesh Brisus HaRabin, that we're worried that you might carry it in the public area. So the Rishonim asked, why do you phrase the problem like that? Why don't we say the problem is we're worried about Hotzah? Right? That's probably what's going to happen. You're in your house, or you're in the shul about to blow shofar, or about to take a lulav, and you have some shaila, so you're going to run outside with it. So that's Hotzah. Why do we focus on Havarat Dal Ramos Rishos HaRabin? So the Meiri, again, fulfilling his role of the major Lamdanim, the major Achronim among the Rishonim, so the Meiri says that the problem is, you're not going to have Akira and Hanaka with the intent to do this Aver. That when the person picked up the Lula, so if they'll pick up the Lula, and they'll have some Shaila, and then he'll run outside with it. So the Akira is not going to be as a part of the Hotzah. The Akira is going to be for a different purpose. So that would be an issue for Hotzah. But when it comes to Havaras Dal Ramas for Shosaravin, so there's two components here that are relevant. First of all, maybe you don't have any intent with the Akira and the Hanacha, and that's relevant a little bit to what the Achronim said about Malachas Machsheves, that maybe the Adamus Brishos Arabin doesn't have the same Machsheves requirements. But also what the Meiri points out is that when it comes to Havaras Daladamus Brishos Arabin, so Akira and Hanacha is not the definition of the Yisr. It's a condition. It's a clause in the Yisr. So what about the fact that you have Akira and Hanacha and Daladamus Brishos Arabin, but the Akira and the Hanacha don't take place in the Rosh Hashanah, or at least the Akira doesn't take place in the Rosh Hashanah. The Akira takes place in the Rosh Hashanah. But once you pick it up in the Rosh Hashanah, then you carry a Dal Ramos Rosh Hashanah. So the Meiri says it's okay, and it's to the problem, meaning it's okay for the Isra of Havara, for the Akira and the Hanacha to happen in the Rosh Hashanah, because they're not the definition of the Isra. They're just conditions in the Isra. So a Maisa, you have Dal Ramos Brishos Harabim, and you have Akira and Hanacha, and it doesn't matter that the Akira and the Hanacha happened in a Brishos Hayah. So therefore, that's the concern, essentially the Isra of Havalas Dal Ramos Brishos Harabim, so that's why the Gemara mentions that as the issue, as opposed to Otsa. Okay, there's more to say about those concepts, but that's just, again, a little background of the Toldos of Otsa, and the various gradations of the Yisr here, Hotzah and Hachnasa and Dal Ramos Brishos Harabim. I mentioned yesterday Rav Schwab's point, Alpidar Hadrush, why it would be that Hotzah is really the Yisr and everything else is kind of secondary, because he defined the Yisr as taking something from the Kedusha of the Rishos HaYachid and taking it out to the exposed area of the Rishos HaRabim, which by definition cannot be published because it's Masr Lakal, everyone can have it, and that's all designed to parallel Yetzias Mitzrayim, as Rav Hirsch said. So therefore, within that Hashkafic understanding, we could understand why the real Isser Hashkafically is Hotzah, and the other ones, reversing it with Hafnasa or carrying outside, are secondary or toldos to that because they don't have that same thematic message. Okay, everyone alright with that? Some of that was a little complicated. Any issues with that? Okay, so let's spend a few minutes. This is itself a mega topic, but we'll just speak about it for a few minutes. Talk about the issue of Malachas Machsheves, which we did touch upon and you should definitely have some awareness about. So Malachas Machsheves is a mysterious concept. As the Gemara complains, you mentioned this Gemara the other day, the Gemara commenting on the Mishnah, on Chagiga Dafir Aleph. Now, when the Mishnah says that Hilchos Shabbos, Gaharim HaTzalim B'Sayres, that the laws of Shabbos are like mountains hanging from hairs, so that highlights the fact that there's so little in Torah Shabbat. And then the Gemara backs that up by saying, especially Malachas Machsheves, which is such a defining principle in Hilchos Shabbos, we don't even have that in the context of Shabbos and the Torah. We have that in the context of the Mishkan, and we have to know, because we learn out things from the Mishkan to Shabbos, that this is one of them. Not just one of them, but it is a defining principle. So we spent a little bit of time, and we'll just go over it very quickly now, in terms of trying to figure out what is the role that Malachas Machsheves plays in Hilchos Shabbos. So there are a couple of questions. One question is that, what does the word mean? How do you translate the phrase Malachas Machsheves? So on the one hand, you could say that it means intent. Machshava tends to refer to intent. So maybe it has to be a purposeful Malacha. And many of the halachos that are connected to Malachas Machsheves do seem to follow that pattern. So for example, the idea that you have to have a malacha hatzricha lagufa, that the malacha has to be for the same purpose, either for the same purpose that was done in the Mishkan, or for a positive purpose. So that seems to flow from that idea. The idea that there's an exemption for davar she'eino miskaven, if you don't intend to do the action at all, might correlate to this, although that's a little bit murkier, because that's a principle of b'chol Torah kula,
Shabbos.
Not only a Shabbos principle, but we still see that by Shabbos it may have its own dimension, so that might still be true. The other idea is that misase, the person doesn't know what he's doing in the first place, that there are a number of dinim that do seem to connect to a machshava as thought, as intent, type of definition. But there are a lot of other halachas that don't necessarily follow this. So makalkel, if you're doing something destructive, you may fully intend to do something destructive. But that still, we find, is connected to melachas machshavas, at least according to some rishonim. Some of these are gemaras, and some of these are more debatable. Or if you do something kalachar yad, if you do something in a roundabout way, so again, so you might think that that has nothing to do with machshava. So machshavas could also be translated as chashivas, as something that is significant. The words are related to each other, but they have different points of focus. You know, your machshiv, you give thought to something that you consider important. So the words for thought and importance are connected words. But machshavas, you can see it being translated either way, a malacha that is purposeful, or a malacha that is significant. So we also find, for example, the position of the Rashbam that we mentioned, that the malacha that's lacking a shir, well, chatzi shir question, malacha that's lacking a shir, is considered to be missing machshavas. So apparently we have maybe two forms of machshavas, maybe they link to each other, but you have machshavas as referring to intent, and you have machshavas as referring to chashivas. And onkus, on the pasuk, in Vayakel, translates Machas Machshavas as Umnavasa, as Malachas Umnas, Malachas the craftsman, and Rashi Masachas Beitza uses the same phrase. So it seems to be that we have both of these things. Now this correlates to what we said in our introduction to Shabbos, that we have two different issues that we were trying to figure out about what a Malacha is and about what the Isser, the individual, is to do Malacha. So this could really correlate to the two halves here. That it could be that the definition of a malacha requires also that the malacha be significant and be craftsmanlike. That's focused on machshavas. And the isser malacha on the individual to do a malacha, so that involves a certain degree of intent. And that's that half of the malachas machshavas equation.
What's the first one, sorry?
Sorry?
The first aspect, not the individual.
The defining of malacha. We want to know what's a malacha, right? What's considered to be a malacha. So something is only considered to be a malacha if it's significant.
So that fits into how we understand.
Yes, what a malacha, definition of malacha itself.
The issue of like Amir la'akum and things like that.
Well, that whole discussion, when we had about Amir la'akum, so that provoked the whole conclusion that there's two halves of the equation, what is a malacha and what's the isser malacha for a Jew. So here too, it might be that they correlate, that the isser malacha for a Jew requires that the malacha also be machshavas in the sense of possessing of intent. While the definition of a malacha abstractly requires machshavas in the sense of importance.
How does onkelistus and Rashi's
It seems to be more about importance of the item, although
so
theoretically
that really fits into the significance.
It seems like it, yeah. That the definition of a malacha itself is that it has to be something like a craftsman. You find a lot of other applications like this. We should also mention that sometimes we find malachas machshavas as a chiyuv. It's more often invoked as a ptur, as something that you're going to get off the hook for because your malacha wasn't machshavas, but sometimes both in the Gemaras and in the Rishonim, we find it used in an affirmative context as a basis for a chiyuv. So, for example, the Gemara in Bava Kamma raises it in the context of Zorah. There's a malacha of winnowing, but if you're going to throw your produce up into the air and have the wind sift it out, so the Gemara in Bava Kamma says that a similar thing in the Zikin, if you're going to fan a flame like that, using the wind to do half the work, you'd be pater, that'd be called grama. So shouldn't we say here as well that grama is going to be pater? So the Gemara answer is malachas machshavas. And we saw that in the Rishonim, there are different interpretations of what that means. That it could mean that because your intent came about, even though otherwise it would be grama, but in Hilchos Shabbos, that's called your problem. because you have intent and malachat machshavas is a chiyuv in this case. Or alternatively, it might mean that just because we know Zora is a malacha, and therefore, even if it doesn't follow the rules, but because it's included in the malachos, that's what it means by saying malachas machshavas, so it has its status even though it otherwise would be patur. So in other words, the Gemara talking specifically only about Zora and things like that, where the Torah includes it, or maybe it will be extended to other malachos also, if you have a roundabout plan that ends up working out because you wanted to, so maybe that should also be called Chayiv because of malachos mashavos. You also find there's machlokas, the Rashba and the Ran, about, let's say, writing on Shabbos, if you're doing osios. So normally, if you do what's called kol tochos, if you carve out, you have black ink, and you carve away the black ink to get the white space, so you have a letter that's done backwards, and bring it about through carving it out of the letter, carving it out of a blotch, so that's normally not called tzeiva. But the Ran says that because of malachas machshavas, for Shabbos that is called tzeiva. So again, it's another example of how malachas machshavas might be invoked as a chiyuv. And there are those who suggest, probably taps into this whole question, that there's room to ask, what is the impact of not having malachas machshavas? When you say you're pater because something is not malachas machshavas, so is that because it's not a malacha at all? A malacha is only considered to be a malacha if it's machshavas. If it's lacking that, it's nothing. Or do we say, no, a malacha can exist without machshavas, you're just putter for it. So that could be relevant as well, and Rav Nachum Zemb and others suggest that's a machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam. And that's relevant, for example, to the question of Chatzi Shir, that since Chatzi Shir, according to the Rashbam, means it's lacking in machshavas, so according to the Rambam, if it's lacking in machshavas, it's not a malacha at all, because a malacha is defined by machshavas, so any lacking of a shir in Halacha Shabbos is going to take away a chiyuv. While Rashi says there is an iser derais of chatzi shir on Shabbos, but as we understood him to say, but not if the malacha itself was incomplete, because there's two different concepts according to Rashi. You can have a complete malacha without a shir, apparently without machshavas, and still be called a malacha, and maybe the Rambam disagrees. Then we mentioned also that some of the Talmidim of the Avnezer, the Chalfes Yod, and the Kajalavra, seem to also understand that maybe the idea of Malachas Machshavas correlates to Lishma. If we look to the Mishkan had Malachas Machshavas, they suggest because the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, has to be built Lishma, maybe that's what Machshavas means here, and then we discussed a little bit the difference between Kavana and Lishma. They're sometimes used interchangeably, but they're not really the same thing exactly. Kavanah is about the intent of the individual in doing, let's say, a mitzvah, while lishma has to do with an item or an act that's being devoted for a certain purpose, like a sefer Torah or a get or a korban, has to be lishma. The item has its status because it's set aside for that purpose, and that's called lishma. And parenthetically, we did discuss very briefly how some of these svaras could apply to, let's say, if you have a gadget to turn on a light or something like that, where things happen, say, indirectly or not even indirectly, where if you do an action and that allows the malacha to take place without you, so is that an etza for turning on lights and Shabbos alight? And we mentioned that theoretically, on the deraisa level, it seems like there's a basis to say that that should not be considered an action at all, especially Halacha Shabbos, there is a greater emphasis on your actually doing an action. On the other hand, in terms of Zilzil Shabbos, in terms of certain other drabanans and the like that we have about creating an atmosphere of respectful Shabbos, it's highly questionable whether that would be a good idea, even if in our Torah there is a logic to say that it's not a maisa, and then especially when it comes to Halacha Shabbos, is a priority. Okay, any questions about that? Any questions about any of those things? Okay, so God willing, tomorrow we'll continue with the Chazar Wanadu Parsha as well, so try to do Shlishi of Shmini, and also at least hopefully the topic of Shnayim Shasal. We'll try to get that in tomorrow if we get a little bit more in Matov. and then hopefully the client will be able to fill in whatever we're missing. All right, who wants to have mincha for us? Oh, yeah, you look like you're a man.